The headlines this hour: Germany buries its Afghan war dead amid growing public opposition to the war. Several people are killed in the latest US drone attack on Pakistan's tribal areas. And Iran practices defending its Persian Gulf islands during a third day of naval drills.
Hello everyone, you're watching Press TV News.
Thanks for joining us. Our top story this hour: Germany has held a memorial service for four of its troops killed in Afghanistan early this month. Here's more.
Bidding farewell to troops killed in Afghanistan, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, along with Defense Minister Karl Guttenberg and Foreign Minister Guido Westerwelle, on Saturday attended a memorial service for four troops killed in a Taliban ambush on April 15th. Guttenberg made an address at the memorial in which he warned of rising German deaths in the Afghan war.
What has become clear since the combat on April 15th and on Good Friday is something which we perhaps have not wanted to admit is true. Death and injury have become part of our deployment and will remain to be in the coming years, and not only in Afghanistan. This, therefore, means that we must be committed to stopping these deployments, death and injury, from becoming routine.
Germany has stationed 5,350 troops in Afghanistan, making it the third biggest contributor to the US-led war after the US and Britain. Over the past 6 months, Berlin has extended the duration of both the Army's Afghanistan mandate and its troop count with significant bipartisan backing in Parliament. And this while Germany's constitution renounces war, and a large majority of German public oppose their country's involvement in the conflict.
Another U.S. drone attack in Pakistan has killed several people. Pakistani security forces say a U.S. drone fired three missiles into what they called a militant compound, killing seven people. The attack came in the tribal areas of the North Waziristan, near the Afghan border. Since last year, the U.S. has carried out dozens of drone attacks on Pakistan's tribal areas. Washington claims its airstrikes target militants. Most of the attacks, however, have ended up killing civilians. Islamabad has repeatedly condemned the attacks, saying they violate Pakistan's sovereignty.
Well, staying with Pakistan, unknown gunmen have destroyed four NATO fuel tankers heading to Afghanistan. Police say the attackers have opened fire on the tankers, causing a massive fire south of the capital, Islamabad. Police say three members of the country's security forces were killed in the clashes following the incident. Militants have repeatedly carried out strikes against the supplies heading for the NATO-led forces in Afghanistan since the US-led invasion of the country 9 years ago.
Iran has wrapped up its major military drills in the Persian Gulf on the third and final day of the exercises. Here is more.
Naval, air and ground units from Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps have been holding major drills in the Persian Gulf and the strategic Strait of Hormuz. According to IRGC, the third day of exercises focused on defending the Persian Gulf coastlines and islands while fighting back Mark Halliburton attacks. Iranian officials say these drills are a show of their capacity to maintain regional peace and security.
These drills, in fact, are a show of Iran's military might. The message of the Islamic Republic to its neighbors is security, stability, peace and friendship. This is the most important message of these drills, especially when a number of our neighboring countries in the Persian Gulf are participating.
Also on Saturday, Iranian naval forces inspected an Italian and a French vessel in the Strait of Hormuz. The IRGC allowed the vessels to pass through after making sure they were complying with environmental regulations. drills will continue on Sunday. IRGC commanders say naval missiles will be launched in the next phase of the maneuvers.
Well, hundreds of people have held an anti-US rally in the central Iranian town of Tabas on the anniversary of a failed American operation in the region back in 1980. The demonstrators shouted anti-US slogans and expressed their anger against what they called global arrogance. Meanwhile, the wreckage of a Sea Stallion helicopter that collapsed during the operation was also displayed as a symbol of the U.S. failure. The attempt, known as Operation Eagle Claw, had aimed to rescue Americans held hostage in Tehran after the 1979 Islamic Revolution. However, a sandstorm hit and downed the helicopters, killing 8 American servicemen. The units involved in the operation were the U.S. Air Force, Army, Navy and Marine Corps. The incident occurred during the administration of the former U.S. President Jimmy Carter.
Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad says the nation will not give up one iota of its nuclear rights. Ahmadinejad said the West is using Iran's nuclear energy program as a pretext to pursue its political aims. Ahmadinejad was speaking in a Ugandan capital, Kampala. He said Iran has lived up to all of its obligations under the international laws. Ahmadinejad also warned against new sanctions on Iran. He said Barack Obama took office to remake the negative image of Washington worldwide. He added the U.S. president will be the one to suffer if such sanctions are in fact imposed. Ahmadinejad visited Uganda on the second and last leg of his African tour. He met his Ugandan counterpart during his two-day stay in Kampala. He visited Zimbabwe earlier this week and has just arrived back in the Iranian capital. Turkish Armenians and peace activists have commemorated the mass killings of Armenians in 1915 in Ottoman Turkey.
Well, the incident is something that remains a source of contention between Ankara and Yerevan, as Press TV's Jody Sobral reports.
Candles for Armenians who died in 1915 in Ottoman Turkey. This is a show of Turkey's public desire for reconciliation with its neighbor Armenia, say these activists. This commemoration is just one of many taking place in Turkey on the day that Armenians worldwide mark the death of hundreds of thousands of their kin in what they describe was an act of genocide by Ottoman Turks. Turkey categorically rejects the genocide label, but accepts that atrocities were committed and argues it wasn't a systematic attempt to destroy Christian Armenians, rather a consequence of civil strife during World War I. People here say they want peace with their neighbour, something that now seems increasingly under threat. Just some days ago, the Armenian parliament announced that it had blocked ratification of the protocols that were signed by both parties last October. With the ratification process now halted in Yerevan, and with Ankara busy working on constitutional change, it does now seem that the process has come to a standstill. But Turkey says it's still committed to improving ties, and that results shouldn't be expected overnight.
Both sides need to be more patient and be more helpful. It's not easy for either in public opinion, but we want to normalize our relationship with Armenia.
Cengiz Algan, a peace activist, believes public diplomacy can aid the political process. He co-founded a website that apologizes to Armenians for what happened in 1915. Over 30,000 people have visited the online campaign, which he says aims to be as inclusive as possible.
We choose wording that wouldn't upset anyone. For example, we didn't use the wording genocide. Maybe some of us believe genocide happened, but we focused on reconciliation.
The protocols were signed last October with no preconditions attached on both sides. However, Ankara continues to demand Armenia withdraw its troops from a strip of territory belonging to longtime ally, the Republic of Azerbaijan. Turkey closed its border with Armenia in 1993 to protest the Armenian-backed war by separatists in the Nagorno-Karabakh region.
We want to open up the borders, but we need to move on many sides. This is not just a one-track approach. We hope that the relationship between Armenia and Azerbaijan will be much better. And this is what we're working on.
There were small pockets of provocation by Turkish nationalists, but the fact that this commemoration took place in a peaceful manner is a sign that reconciliation can prevail. But when and how is still open to debate. Jody Sobral, Press TV, Istanbul.
Now, the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, has called for a collaborative effort to tackle the global financial crisis.
The IMF has hailed signs of a strengthening economic rebound, but says many challenges remain in the way of recovery. The 186-member body has added that it's strongly committed to ensuring sustainable public finances and addressing sovereign debt risks. The IMF's financial committee issued the statements after a meeting which was overshadowed by the Greek debt crisis. Earlier in the day, U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner pressed both EU leaders and the IMF to hammer out a rescue plan for Athens' financial problems. Russia adds yet another piece to its ambitious new pipeline project dubbed South Stream.
Well, Moscow has signed an agreement to extend the pipeline to Austria. Press TV's Eva Manasieva tells us more.
The Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin arrived in the Austrian capital Vienna on a very important occasion for his country. During an official ceremony in the presidential palace Hofburg, Austria joined the South Stream gas pipeline project. And with Austria the last country to join the fold, construction work on the project will begin later this year. The deal has already been signed by Serbia, Hungary, Slovenia, Greece, Italy and Croatia.
South Stream is further proof that for us, the gas supplies from Russia are of big importance. Austria imports 70% of its gas from Russia.
The pipeline, a joint venture of Russia's Gazprom and Italy's Eni companies, will run under the Black Sea and enter the European Union via Bulgaria to carry 63 billion cubic meters of gas a year when it becomes operational in 2015. South Stream is of crucial importance for Russia, which has been anxious to seek energy routes to bypass Ukraine, which transits 80% of Russian gas exports, after a pricing dispute caused gas shortages in Europe in early 2009. With Austria now part of the South Stream pipeline, Russia proved its intentions to pursue South Stream despite recent indications from Ukraine's new government that it is poised for closer cooperation in gas transit.
We have big reserves of natural gas. We are able to satisfy not only the growing demand in Russia for the next 100 years, but also the growing demand of any of our European clients.
Austria, however, has also backed the rival Nabucco pipeline project, which is supported by the European Union and the United States and is meant to reduce energy dependence on Russia by supplying gas from the Caspian Sea region. Austrian officials have stressed the need for having more than one pipeline. Analysts believe Austria joined the Russian South Stream pipeline only because of the still uncertain future of Nabucco.
Unfortunately, Nabucco is not so advanced yet. Its future is still being negotiated. There are very few contracts signed. But Nabucco and South Stream are in big competition and the future is still undecided.
Austria has high hopes for the Nabucco pipeline project, which was started by the Austrian oil and gas company OMV in 2004 with the aim of reducing Europe's gas dependence on Russia. With the signing of the South Stream pipeline project, Austria will be now sitting on two horses, with potentially conflicting interests in two gas pipelines. And if Nabucco is successful, as Austria hopes, analysts believe the business climate between Russia and Austria would worsen. Eva Manasieva, Press TV, Vienna.
A reminder of the headlines on Press TV now. Germany buries its Afghan war dead amid growing public opposition to the war. Several people are killed in the latest U.S. drone attack on Pakistan's tribal areas. And Iran practices defending its Persian Gulf islands during a third day of naval drills.